10, 15.
Back upfield to the 35, to the 40, 45, 50.
Pass the 50.
35, 40.
Pass the 30.
To the 20.
Inside the 20.
You got to be kidding me.
To the 10.
Whoa! He scores!
He's all the way home.
The no flags!
Oh, my God. Oh, goodness. Holy moly.
They're not going to keep him off the field tonight.
One of the greatest upsets in sports history.
Hello again, everyone, and this is the Old College Try. This is your host, Tim Highland, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Mike Unger. Mike, at this point, this is a Tuesday evening. I had to guess there for a second what day it was. Are you feeling anywhere near back to normal yet?
It's around 9 p.m., and when you have to say Eastern, you know that you've had a rough weekend, because, of course, we spent the weekend on the West Coast in Seattle and Oregon. It was a tremendous 4 days out there, seeing the Ducks, the Beavers, and the Emerald City of Seattle. But, yes, I've been thinking about these trips. They are exacting more and more toll each year.
Yes.
I'm nowhere near back to 100%. It's Tuesday at 9 p.m. Hopefully I'll get there by the weekend, but then, of course, that just brings another weekend. I think the problem is we act at these games the same way we did 20 years ago, yet our bodies are 20 years older.
Right, and we are getting a little more ambitious with the travel, too, aren't we, Mike?
Yes, yeah. Yes. This was a tremendous trip that we'll get into, but it was intense travel. I mean, we flew from the East Coast to Seattle at the crack of dawn on Thursday. We spent a lot of time at breweries in Seattle on Thursday. We got up at the crack of dawn on Friday and flew to Portland. We drove to Eugene. We got up very early on Saturday, drove from Eugene to Corvallis, and then early doesn't even describe what time we got up on Sunday to head back to the East Coast. But it was all worth it because it was an awesome trip.
It was, I think I'd said several times during the trip, and of course the heat of the moment, Mike, that I was like, oh, I think this is like my favorite trip. And actually, like, I mean, I, having reflected on it, there was something about it that did make it to me like, wow, this could be my favorite trip of the entire bunch. There is something to the doubleheader, first of all. Being able to knock off two locations in one trip is, there's something to that. But so let's get into the trip, Mike. So again, we were in, we saw games in Oregon against Colorado, right?
On Friday night.
And then Oregon State versus Utah. So we saw, the bonus here too was that we saw two excellent teams. Oregon and Utah both look excellent. But to see, the contrast between a game in Eugene versus a game in Corvallis was striking and interesting. To see the contrast, to me, between the contrast in Seattle and Portland was equally striking. Because in my mind, I'd always thought of Seattle and Portland as being as the same. And they clearly are not, Mike.
Seattle's a huge, thriving metropolis, and Portland is a small, quirky town.
It's a hard-scrabble little place.
Yes, it is. And this is by no means an insult on it. I love Portland, but no, Seattle is urban. It's got tall buildings. It's got a massive downtown. It's beautifully situated on the waterfront, where Portland has none of those things. But Portland's got a lot of great things going for it. One thing you mentioned, this was such a great trip because we met so many genuinely nice people. But I think what's happening is, we've been doing this trip for so long now, and they're all great. People often ask me to rank them, and I find it very difficult because there's really not a single one that I haven't loved. But at this point, we've really checked off a lot of, I'd say, cathedrals of college football, right? We've been to LSU, Ole Miss, Wisconsin, Ohio State, Texas. We've both been to Penn State. I've been to Notre Dame, Georgia. These are some big, big schools in the history in the college football kind of ecosystem. Now, our last two trips, you know, we went to see Colorado. We went to see Air Force. We went to see University of Oregon. We went to see Oregon State. These are places, I thought, easily in my lifetime I could never go to.
Right.
And a lot of people are not as fortunate as us to do that. So when we are out there talking to folks about what we do, I think they're truly touched that we're out there to see what their state, their town, their school, their college football program has to offer. And the people in Oregon certainly fit that bill.
Yeah, and I told my wife the same thing. It's like we are at the point now where again, these trips are ostensibly about college football, but to have the we almost have the same conversation with every person we meet. We're like, oh, why are you guys here? We're like, oh, I know where you're from. And you're always like, oh, we're from Baltimore and Philadelphia. And like, why are you here?
Right? Jaws hit the ground, especially in Oregon when we say that.
And we tell them what we're doing. This is our ninth year doing this trip, whatever. And they're so sincerely happy. They think it's the greatest idea ever. But then also,
everybody thinks it's very, very cool.
And also, that it's like, once you tell them that, they want you to have the best time possible in their town. And I love that part of it. Possibly my favorite part of our trip was the brewery stopped in halfway between Eugene and Corvallis, which was
Monroe,
an impromptu
Oregon.
Yeah, impromptu stop. Beautiful little brewery, by the way.
Long Timber Brewery.
Incredible.
Incredible woodwork inside.
And then we watched the fourth quarter of the Georgia game there. We'll get into that later, of course. The nice couple next to us, we were telling them, we had a great conversation about the contrast between the Ducks games and the Beavers games and how they're big Timbers fans and the rest of it. But we have the same conversation every year now, but I love it every time. And people are just like, so thrilled that we're there.
Yeah, and as you say to a lot of people, ostensibly they're about college football, and of course that is the reason, and we love college football, but it's a great way to see the country.
Yeah.
This one also was a great way to see many, many breweries. this trip was brewery heavy, and the beer that we drank in almost every brewery was fantastic.
Was there a bad one?
You always make fun of me for drinking Miller Lite, but I really could have used a couple Miller Lights on this trip. Right. I mean, we were drinking 7.5% IPAs everywhere, and each one I had were delicious, but it took its toll. It was
so one through this real quick.
I regret nothing.
So again, we flew to Seattle. I'll just say again, we already said Seattle's a fantastic city. Next day had a beautiful little the 30-minute shuttle to Portland, which is a nice little flight, Mike.
On a prop plane.
Yeah, it's always fun. Portland again, just. I have not seen the show Portlandia, but my sister is a big fan of it. And she's like, everyone who's been there tells me that Portland is just like Portlandia. And you said the same thing.
I will echo that 100%.
We had made a stop that I'm sure you enjoyed, Mike, at the home of Thorns FC and the Timbers. Mike?
The best part of that was how long you took in the gift shop.
I was nerding out big time. And I got a Timbers scarf. It's going to be posted in my new Garage Man Cave this weekend. From there was to Eugene. So the Eugene day was kind of a busy day. We had a lot going on there. The biggest takeaway there for me, and I will say, people have always said, people who really know the game, who've traveled and seen these places, you always hear how great Autzen Stadium is, right? I was skeptical because I was like, I can't see there being vintage SEC or one of the better Big Ten atmospheres being at a place on the West Coast. It seems out of place a little bit. I was extremely impressed by Autzen Stadium, the facade, the size of it, the crowd intensity. People there are super into the Ducks, Mike.
Yes, everybody was decked out in their Duck gear. First of all, I loved the approach. We were told to be it's actually on a different side of the Willamette River than main campus and where we were pre-gaming. So we were dropped off at this kind of pedestrian bridge, and you walk to the stadium through a beautiful park that just screams Auburn, right? There's tall trees everywhere and pine needles and
actual ducks.
Actual ducks. We saw some actual ducks in a little pond. It was glorious. And then you emerge through the woods and you see this facade that's
enormous.
Austin Stadium. It's enormous, but it's not. It's as to your point, it's not a classic kind of East Coast stadium. It's exactly what you would expect from Oregon. It's slick. It's very glass heavy, right? It's got these lights, but it's kind of understated lights. It's a beautiful football stadium, and you don't say that much. You know, I do this stuff with baseball parks all the time, and almost every other park I go to, wow, it's a beautiful park. You just don't say that with football stadiums. A lot of times they're a little more utilitarian, but this had a perfect look to it. And once again, I'd like to salute Oregon. It's the capacity is 54,000,
which to me, I didn't know that, Mike. I was wondering about that, and it looks a lot bigger than 54,000.
Well, almost. I mean, I'm not sure whether it was a sellout because actually, where we went for the first half, we went in kind of a corner and we had a little room around us. But if it wasn't a sellout, it was close to a sellout. And again, this game kicked off at 7 p.m. local time, and as we experienced, this was the most shocking part: traffic on the way from Portland to Eugene. That was crazy. Luckily, we had a little entertainment in the car with us, Tim.
Yes.
But it was beautiful, and again, everybody decked out in their Ducks gear. The Ducks wore yellow, right? Their yellow jerseys on the game, and they looked impressive, right? Herbert, he's got the NFL size, he's got the NFL poise. Obviously, Colorado is not an upper tier team, but they look like a really, really good team, and the fans were certainly into it. It was all in all, it was an A plus college football experience.
I totally agree. I was very blown away, and to your point about the actual Oregon Ducks this year. The game was never in doubt from the first play of the game. It was clear who the better team was and who was going to win the game. So kudos to the Ducks overall. So then we stayed in Eugene for the night. Again, we hit several breweries that evening. The next day, you may have been unhappy with me at the time, but I'm hoping you're happy with me now. I did implore you that we had to get out of the hotel and go see Corvallis earlier. So if we didn't do that, Mike, we wouldn't have stopped in Monroe probably, right?
You're right. Now, I did love, and I mean love, waking up in a hotel room at 8 a.m., rolling over and turning on game day, and the noon kickoffs happen at 9 on the West Coast. I could have easily laid in bed and watched all those noon/9 a.m. games in bed. But yes, you implored us to leave. We got to see Hayward Field, the legendary track stadium at
Pretty
the
cool,
University
right?
of Oregon. Incredibly cool. And they're doing a God knows how many million, you know, tens of million of dollar renovation to it right now with that Nike money. And then we drove, as you said, we drove from Eugene to Corvallis and stopped at a couple breweries on the way. And it was great. And at this one Long Timber that we loved so much, we watched the fourth quarter and overtime of the Georgia-South Carolina game with our third member of our travel companion, of course, noted listener Brian Schlater, a UGM alum who had a tough day with what his Dogs did. But it was great timing.
Also, people should note, too, when you drive from Eugene to Corvallis, there's not like a, you know, I-95 taking you there.
No.
We were on single lane roads, right? Driving past these little kind of like hamlets. And it was what I had expected, at least, from what the drive to Corvallis would be. Right, Mike?
Yes, yes. And our second brewery was near the, quote, Corvallis Airport.
Airport, yeah.
I found that shocking. It was really just a field with grass, which is what you'd expect. But again, another great stop at the dollar store to buy our tailgating our stuff. The guy in line behind us just had to be curious about what we were buying. We were buying all kinds of chairs and styrofoam coolers and beer. And kudos to the dollar store in Monroe, Oregon for selling beer. But when we told him what we were doing, I thought he was going to ask to come with us and hang out with us all day because he also thought that we were on a very noble outing.
And then finally, our night in Corvallis. There's so much to unpack on the Corvallis scene. We had a great hotel location right downtown. We call it downtown. We decided to tailgate, which I think was kind of fun, actually. We met some
nice
people.
Yeah, it was a great move. We met a lot of great Beavers fans while we were tailgating.
The guy who was wearing the John Daly Oregon State pattern yes. pants was great to talk to. His daughters were so embarrassed by him, by the way.
they should be.
That was fun. The stadium, and again, the Ducks fans we talked to before we got there, they kept calling it a high school stadium. And I'm not going that far. But there's a stark contrast between Autzen and Reser Stadium, Mike, right?
And first of all, we did not know the name of Reser Stadium until we were there in Corvallis. And I think that might be among the only Power 5 stadium names that I didn't know. I was thinking about this actually today. There might be one or two others. But the biggest thing, I doing a little quote-unquote research for this podcast, the capacity of Reser Stadium, 45,674, only... what, 9,000 less than Autzen, and yet it seemed like 90,000 less.
Yes.
And that's not even because it was empty. There was actually a pretty good crowd there. Oregon State was coming off a resounding win over UCLA. You can't say that very often in recent Oregon State history. But it just the feel was obviously completely different.
There was a couple moments there I was like, wow, it's amazing that Oregon State's actually in the Pac-12. Like, it doesn't have the feel of a power or a Power 5 program. You know what I'm saying, Mike?
I do understand. I mean, that's why it's – I have a feeling we would feel the same if we were at a Kansas game or a Rutgers game.
Right.
Actually, I'm sure out of Kansas and Rutgers going in blindly, having never been to either of those, I bet Oregon State's a much better atmosphere.
All right, Mike, wrapping up then, any final thoughts on the trip? Again, to me, it was just it was a top three trip, and I loved every part of it except for my horrible trip home on Sunday that lasted 20 hours. But
getting home and bouncing back has been difficult. But kudos to Brian. It was very well planned. We had an awesome time. Never did you ever think you'd be at Austin Stadium and Reser Stadium? No, you didn't. But no. We are because of this trip. And I'll add just one other thing. You said you were caught up in the moment when you were saying it's the best, might have been your most favorite trip, and I think you've probably said that on every trip. But
right.
Speaking of being caught up in the moment, we also have committed to going to Dublin next year for Navy Notre Dame for our trip. I'm just going to want to get that out there on the record.
We have committed. Now, whether or not Aaron and Marissa are committed, I think Aaron's in for it.
Yeah.
So we'll see. That'll be a fun, unique, of course, one of a kind of experience, right, Mike?
Yep.
All right. Week in review. We touched on it briefly again. So number 13, Oregon 45, Colorado 3. I'll just say again, Oregon looks legit. And I heard today, I was listening to Full Ride, our favorite show on Sirius XM, and they had Holly Rowe, who's at the game, and she was saying she had spent the week preparing for the show and talking to other Pac-12 coaches. And this is notable, Mike, because as you know, I've always been very skeptical of Oregon because of their lack of physicality, right?
Right.
She said she talked to three or four coaches who said that for the first time since a long time, it's not just about the flash and the uniforms and the rest of it at Oregon, that they can actually play, and they play physical and they play hard, which is a big step forward for them. So kudos to those guys out there.
Absolutely. And think about how close they were to beating Oregon. And if they had beaten Oregon,
Auburn,
how different. I mean, Auburn, pardon me. That's right. And if they had, how different the whole story of their season would be right now. But still, a huge game coming up against Washington this week.
Miami 17, number 20, Virginia 9. The ACC is a mess, right, Mike?
Especially that side of it.
And again, Mike, who's on that side of it?
Everybody but Clemson and Florida State and Louisville and NC State. I can name the other division and then just take everybody else.
Number one, Bama 47. Number 24, A&M 38. So I was very confident all weekend about A&M covering. Did they cover, Mike, or no?
I'm not. Well, so what was the final?
47. Oh, it's wrong here. Definitely. I have the wrong number there.
47-28 or something,
28,
I think Texas A&M actually did cover, but you said it was going to be a
close game.
That's different than saying it's going to cover. So
number two, Clemson 45, Florida State 14. This result just makes me nostalgic for the days when Florida State Clemson was a big deal.
Yeah, it no longer is. Of course, this was the biggest underdog Florida State had been since 1978, I believe it was.
So
I'm sorry, Bama did cover by two.
Ugh. So for Clemson now, and this is kind of a sad statement, and even like not even a year ago, the ACC was really good, or pretty good, right? They were a solid conference last year. But the current state of things, if you had to ask Clemson, who in reality, who's your biggest rival? It's Alabama.
Yeah, I think you're right. That's a very good point. I mean, maybe they get a little more juice with the South Carolina game after South Carolina's win over Georgia. And also, they're playing Louisville this week. Louisville's massively improved and can certainly score. The game is in Louisville, and it's a nooner. We'll get to that later. But I would be a little more concerned about that game if I was a Clemson fan.
And it's Satterfield there, right, at Louisville?
Yep.
Oh, he's doing an awesome job. And that guy,
he really is.
He's going to be a great coach. South Carolina 20, number 3, Georgia 17. Now, so this game first came on our radar as we were driving from Eugene to Corvallis, and it was, I think it was the second quarter, and it was close, and I asked Brian, I'm like, Brian, are you nervous at all? And he was like, no. And I believe him. He's like, no, but we're fine, right? Midway through the third quarter, as we were driving near Monroe, Brian was getting nervous. And then we got to the brewery, and Brian was definitely nervous.
Yes, he had every right to be.
I did say, I think he handled the loss well. He didn't let it linger too much, did he, Mike?
No, I think he didn't, and there were many reasons for that. I mean, he was on vacation in Oregon and going from brewery to brewery. That certainly helped. But also, and I kept saying this, this is one of the factors of the playoff. A loss like this does not kill you. If Georgia wins the rest of their games, granted, they have no room for error that now. But if they beat Florida, if they beat Alabama, if they make it to the SEC title game, beat Alabama, they'll be in the playoff.
I totally agree. At the same time, I think you need to look at this game and say, like, all right, what does this tell us about Georgia? Yeah, right. Are they good enough?
And I completely agree with you. Jake Fromm played terribly with the turnovers. South Carolina looked like they were just more fired up for it, and they just wanted it more. And now what college football is a great way of doing is now you look back on Georgia and say, wow, you know, they weren't really blowing people out in the same way that Alabama, Ohio State, Clemson, some of those teams were, right, earlier on. And everyone kind of overlooked that and said, well, you know, Georgia's, they're just a little more of a workmanlike team, right? They're not built to blow people out. And that might be true. But now you look back at those games in a different light. You say, well, who really is Georgia? And we'll have to see moving forward.
I do think Georgia and Penn State have the same issue, where I think Georgia and Penn State have great defenses. But in the current climate of the game, where you have Bama, Oklahoma, Clemson, or right now Clemson, next, but Ohio State, putting up insane numbers in offense, if you can't outscore people, you're going to have problems.
Right, because you could have an off day, essentially.
Right, exactly. Number 5, LSU 42. Number 7, Florida 28. Look, Florida's got a brutal stretch here right now. This is not a bad loss for Florida. LSU has definitely elevated themselves to a team to be considered, right?
Oh, yeah, and I'm actually watching the replay of this game right now, and it's an awesome game. Florida very much in the game. Of course, we didn't really see a ton of football. That's one of the offshoots of going to games, is you don't really see as much football as you'd like. You glance at the score, 42-28, you know, that could be anything. That could be LSU in control the whole game and Florida tacks on a score too late. That is absolutely not the way it was. Florida's up in this game 28-21. They have 4 touchdown drives of over 75 yards. Their defense is playing pretty well, but Joe Burrow comes through in the end, and LSU ends up winning it by 2 scores. It's going to be fascinating because LSU does not have the vintage LSU defense that they've had in previous years. But you've seen it's fascinating to see the way LSU and Alabama have completely flipped the script on,
and
you know,
Oklahoma
how they used to play.
Right.
I mean, Saban was all about defense and running the ball. Same with LSU, and now it's the opposite. And when you have offenses like this, it inevitably affects your defense. And we're seeing that with LSU and Bama, although the amount of talent they have, it hasn't hurt them.
Number 6, Oklahoma 34. Number 11, Texas 27. So, Mike, you were very big on – is this your pick last week, your lock?
Yep. I took Texas for my lock of the week.
Did they cover?
They did cover, yep.
Congratulations, covered Mike.
Thank you. They covered easily. This game was on all the TVs, oddly, when we got into that brewery. And so – we got to watch the end of this as the Georgia game was going on as well. This is always a vintage game, and I was very very strongly opinionated the fact that I've been to this game, the Red River Shootout, and I'd be happy if one of you guys picked it again. I would love to go back again because there's really nothing like it in college football.
It's a very strong endorsement, actually.
Yeah, thank you.
Number 8, Wisconsin 38. Michigan State, Mike. Michigan State, 0.
Not surprised by this result at all. I told you about 3 weeks ago, I watched the entire Indiana-Michigan State team. Those are the same team because Michigan State barely beat Indiana. It was a very well-played game by both sides. There was only one turnover total, not a lot of penalties. It was like both teams played well. That's who Michigan State is. That's the caliber of team they are. They're nowhere near the top of the Big 10.
things do seem to be crumbling a bit around Mark D'Antonio. He's melting down a bit.
Yeah, and how old? I mean, how old is he now? He's got to be getting up there, right? I'm not saying the end is near, but there needs to be a succession plan.
Number 9, Notre Dame 30, USC 27. We didn't see. Do we see this game at all, Mike? I don't think we did.
If we did, we don't remember it. No, we didn't. D'Antonio is 63, by the way. But no, I didn't. All I saw were the highlights of this game, and I really don't have much to say about it.
USC is caught in a weird limbo right now. Like, yeah, what? I think we discussed it last week, but I'm like trying to struggle to figure out who is the coach you would hire at USC to like get this thing back to
right,
where
your dream,
it could be.
Your dream coach, yeah.
And I was thinking this today, and I was thinking, you know what? Take the whole context of the reality of how it can never happen out of it. Would Lane Kiffin be the worst hire at USC, Mike?
I don't know. That's not that crazy.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really not that crazy.
Number 10, Penn State 17, number whatever, 20 something, Iowa 12.
Mm-hmm. Classic score for Penn State, Iowa. And we watched much of the end of this game at a Corvallis watering hole.
Well, so it was a bar that the guy wearing the John Daly pants recommended. It was a great bar.
I'll have to take his word for that.
Great win for Penn State, I think. I think it's, and that's just me being a homer. That's like, that was a good solid road win.
Definitely.
For context, Penn State fans have spent the entire week complaining about the officiating, even though they won, Mike.
Really? I don't even want to ask what they're complaining about. Incredible catch by that Iowa receiver, by the way,
to keep that game over close all of a sudden.
That was incredible. And also, I'll say, I think it's a great win for Penn State to go on the road at Iowa in a night game and win. I don't care how you look. I don't care how many points you score. To me, it's a great win.
Louisville 62, number 19, Wake Forest 59, Mike.
Yeah. I saw a lot of the highlights of this game. Wake Forest was playing with their backup quarterback, but Louisville can score. They can score bunches of points. And that's why I would be a little nervous if I was a Clemson fan this week, but it looked like a really entertaining game. Wake had a couple of onside kicks, one that they recovered, one at the very end that they really had a great chance of recovering. Looked like a wild game, but Wake is knocked from the ranks of the unbeaten, of which I believe there are only 12 now left in the country.
Number 15, Utah 52, Oregon State 7. Of course, we were there, Mike. I think we were intently watching for a quarter and a half, I would say.
That's a great estimate of a quarter and a half. And that's really all anyone needed to watch this game for. It was 21-0 Utah at the end of the first quarter, and 35-0 Utah at halftime.
Great. So my mom was texting me on Sunday. She was so excited for, of course, Penn State's win. And she was kind of curious where they were going to land on the rankings or whatever. And I texted her. I was like, well, I don't know, but I can tell you this. Having been there personally, I can tell you Penn State's definitely better than Oregon State.
I can agree with you there. And I would even take Indiana over Oregon State.
Not looking very good right now, right?
No, but they got the big win against UCLA last week. And any Pac-12 win is a huge win for Oregon State. And people were actually a little positive about Jonathan Smith, right? The former Beaver quarterback, just not an exciting name of a guy to lead your program, Jonathan Smith. But he needs like a 10-year contract to get it turned around to where they win 6 to 7 games a year.
But again, one of the values of these trips we do is that you see where places are located and how hard it is to get there or whatever. I mean, it's hard enough to get to Eugene. It's hard to get to Corvallis, Mike. This is like, to get a recruit to come there, it's a big deal, right?
Yeah. You're absolutely right. And you mentioned that a couple times, and I agree with you. It's far from any kind of big population center of football players.
Yes. Perhaps my favorite game of the weekend, and I'm sure yours too, Mike, Temple 30, number 23,
yeah, that's right.
Memphis 28. So I told you guys this too. I have become a Temple football fan.
Yes.
And my frustration is that we have now in Philadelphia a legit D1 program who's right there, and literally no one in Philadelphia cares at all.
Yeah, well, that's a pox on Philadelphia. It has nothing to do with Temple. You stick with the Owls. Did you see the perplexing overturn at the very end of this game? It was 30-28.
Yeah, weird, right?
Very weird. The guy makes an incredible catch for Memphis. You look at the replay, and you think that's going to be confirmed easily within 5 seconds, and they looked at it for 5 minutes and then overturned it inexplicably. It shows you sometimes that replay just does not get it right. But, again, Temple knocks Memphis from the ranks of the unbeaten, so nice win for the Owls. Rod Carey doing good things there in Philly.
Number 25, Cincinnati 38, Houston 23. Again, Cincinnati, another favorite of mine for some reason. Fickell's doing a great job there, Mike.
He is. It's because they're from Ohio. That's why you love him.
That's the only reason?
And you like Fickell. He's kind of an old-school Big Ten type of guy.
Right. And finally, last game, another favorite of mine, number 22, Baylor 33, Texas Tech 30. Baylor suddenly is back on the scene, Mike.
Undefeated Baylor Bears, 6-0, winning this game in overtime. Texas Tech is a much improved team too. At Baylor, they're not blowing people out left and right, but they're getting win after win after win, and they travel to Stillwater this weekend for a date with the Cowboys, where I believe their undefeated run is going to come to an end.
Mike, so we're going to do the top 25 in the AP, and I want to do it for a couple of reasons. One, there's another team that's in the others receiving votes with one vote. And this team, we've not discussed at all. In 8 weeks of this season, we've not discussed this team at all. Can you guess this team?
Give me a conference.
The Sun Belt.
Tulane.
Wrong. Louisiana Tech, one vote, Mike.
Ah, interesting. I think Tulane is actually in, I don't even know if they're in the Sun Belt. I think they might be in Conference USA. But Louisiana Tech, is Skip Holt still the coach of Louisiana Tech?
Probably, right?
I don't know. I'm about to find out. But, right. Yeah, certainly I have nothing to say about Louisiana Tech. Yes, he's still the current coach. He's been coach since 2012. That's a nice run there.
We got San Diego State with two votes, UCF with three votes, A&M with three votes, South Carolina with four votes. USC with four votes. Oh my God. Memphis with six votes. Virginia with eight votes. California with 20 votes. Wake Forest 25. Temple 31. Iowa 36. Tulane 55. On the cusp. They can't break in.
Temple banging on the door there, too.
Right. 25 through 20. We got Washington, Appy State, Iowa, Missouri, Cincy, Minnesota undefeated, by the way, Mike.
Yeah, Minnesota undefeated. And oddly enough, Missouri is a factor in the SEC East now with Georgia's loss.
I mean, Kelly Bryant's a good player.
Yeah.
19 through 15, we got SMU, Baylor, Arizona State, Michigan, Texas.
I love three of those teams, SMU, Baylor, and what was the other one? But they do not fit with Michigan and Texas, who are certainly going the wrong way. Texas, lot of bad tackling against Oklahoma, and the whole Texas is back narrative. Well, they're back against, you know, subpar teams they should beat, and they're still not back against teams that they want to be beaten.
Texas has been for years. They're so soft, aren't they?
Yeah, they really are. They're what you used to say about Oregon.
14 through 10, Boise State, Utah, Oregon, Auburn, Georgia.
A lot of great teams in that category. I still think there's a lot to be said about, I think Auburn and Georgia are still going to have a lot to say about what happens in the SEC and in the college football playoff.
9 through 5, Florida, Notre Dame, Penn State, Wisconsin, Oklahoma.
Penn State is really looking good, I have to say. I watched that HBO 24/7 show about Penn State.
Yeah.
And granted, those things are 60-minute commercials. They're so formulaic. They're commercials and recruiting videos. And they're so formulaic. You're always going to have, you know, the dancing in the locker rooms. You're always going to have the obligatory, hey, we do have to go to study hall and everything. But I will say I came away from it impressed with James Franklin, just his enthusiasm and love for the program. I don't know if I'd say the same about, you know, his coaching. They don't get into, like, really a lot of X's and O's. But I was impressed by that. And I was also impressed by the way he handled that stupid-ass letter that that one of your players got. I loved his response to that.
Finally, 4 through 1, Ohio State, Clemson, LSU, Bama.
Boring.
Right. All right, Mike. Ready?
Yep.
All right, games of the week. Do you have any concerns about number four Ohio State traveling to Evanston for an 8:30 Friday kick on FS1?
No, especially not coming off a bye week. And Northwestern, 1-4 this.
They're a mess. They're a mess.
They are a mess. But did you hear angry old man Pat Fitzgerald at his press conference or to a reporter, I'm not sure which one, saying, why is no one talking about the fact that we scored the most points against Wisconsin this year at 15?
He's getting very grumpy and weird, isn't he?
He is. Ohio State, 28-point favorites. If forced to bet on this game, I'd have to go with the Buckeyes.
Number three, Clemson at Louisville, noon ABC. You mentioned it before, and again, I was thinking today, look, Clemson, their personnel is like light years beyond Louisville's at this point, but Scott Satterfield's an awesome coach.
I would have concerns about this game. And now, again, if you would have asked me, would I have concerns about Clemson at North Carolina, I would have said no. So take this with a grain of salt. But Louisville can flat out score points. It's a noon kickoff. It's a big game for Louisville. Louisville's playing with a ton of confidence, right? They're getting 24 at home. I would certainly take
huge
Louisville.
Number, yeah.
Certainly take Louisville on the points, especially because with the way they can score, even if Clemson's controlling the game, a lot of backdoor cover possibilities in this game.
Is Louisville like one of the weirdest programs in college football?
I don't know specifically what you mean by that, so I can't answer that. What do you mean by the weirdest program?
Just, I mean, like, they're kind of in a weird. Is it a city? Not a city?
Yeah, right. It's an extremely middle sized city.
And also, like, it's a basketball school, but football's been pretty good, and they had the Petrino years.
Yeah, it's like Memphis. Like they're comparable would be University of Memphis, only Memphis is not in a Power 5 program. I think that's a big difference, yeah.
This game to me, too, is also fascinating. Number 9, Florida at South Carolina, noon ESPN. So you have Carolina coming off like this for them. What a great win for Carolina. Yeah. You have Florida, I think, is pretty good.
Yes.
Coming off a back-to-back great win followed by a tough loss. This game is decided by attitude of the teams, I think.
Yes, and this is a very fascinating spread. It's Florida's favored by only 5.5. Who's going to play quarterback for South Carolina? But the question is that, you know, how is South Carolina going to respond emotionally to this game? But also, what a battering Florida has taken right in the last 2 weeks against Auburn and at LSU, right? They're physically beat up, I'm sure. But this is a important game for Florida because it's an SEC East game, so I'll have a little something more to say about this later in the show.
Number 12, Oregon at number 25, Washington, 3:30 ABC. What a great scene that'll be, huh?
Yeah, I mean, we didn't get a chance to go see the University of Washington. It's in Seattle, but it's, you know, far away from where we were downtown. But it's as beautiful as you thought Autzen Stadium was, and it really is, and maybe the stadium itself is a little more pretty than Husky Stadium. The location of Husky Stadium right on Lake Washington there is, to me, can't be beat of places I've actually seen. I haven't seen a game there, but I walked around there. And Oregon and Washington, from everything I've heard and read, it's a legitimate rivalry. They really don't like each other, and both teams are good this year. Going to be an awesome game at 3:30 Eastern. Oregon favored by 2.5 on the road.
Mike, the biggest game of the week, Temple at number 19, SMU, 3:30 ESPN2. First of all, it's a crime that Temple's not yet ranked.
Yeah, well, they're banging on the door there, Timmy.
But they've had a whole string of great wins, and would this be the topper on it to go win at SMU, Mike?
And give the Ponies their first loss. SMU 7.5-point favorites, 3:30 kickoff. Very fun matchup, no doubt.
Kentucky at number 10, Georgia, 6 p.m. ESPN. So for Georgia, you better get off the mat real quick here, right? Because you got a team, a decent Kentucky team, and the 6 p.m. kick's kind of a weird kick time, and the fans are going to be grumpy, right?
They will, but I think this is a good matchup for Kentucky or for Georgia to get back on the right rail. Did you see Kentucky started a wide receiver at quarterback last week and got a win? that was exciting. Georgia 25-point favorites. I think they are going to exact their anger on the Wildcats.
Number 17, Arizona State at number 13, Utah, 6 p.m. Pac-12 Network. First of all, we've said it before, but it's amazing Arizona State is currently number 17 in the country, Mike.
Herm 5-1 getting it done. They had a resounding win over Washington State in a back and forth game on Saturday. Utes 13.5 point favorites at home, and based on what we saw, right, you gotta like Utah, but it's a spunky Arizona State team with this great freshman quarterback. And how long is it, Tim, till we pull off the Arizona State doubleheader? We need a couple years rest from the West Coast, yeah. I think. But it's funny that we're going to go the same number of miles to the east to Ireland next year, but somehow it feels a lot different. But I'd love to pull off that desert doubleheader too.
Number 16, Michigan at number 7, Penn State, 7:30 p.m. ABC. Whiteout game, Mike.
Game day in attendance.
So again, this is me just trying to be as objective as possible. I look at Penn State and I'm like, I think they are objectively a better team than Michigan. And if they play decently, they should win this game.
No doubt. They're 8.5 point favorites. Just how is Michigan going to score on Penn State in a night game at Beaver Stadium with that Penn State defense? I don't see it happening. I think it's going to be I don't know if I'll call it an easy victory for Penn State, but a solid victory. I think the Nits will win this one.
This game, I'm pretty sure I'm accurate on this piece of information. So we have Tennessee at number 1 Bama, 9 p.m. Eastern, ESPN. So one of the great shames of modern college football, along with the fact that Nebraska and Oklahoma don't play anymore, and Penn State and Pitt are going to stop playing, and we lost all these old great rivalries, that Tennessee-Bama, which was for a long time, for decades, perhaps the South's best rivalry, has devolved into meaninglessness, right? This game means nothing whatsoever.
Well, they still play every year, despite being in different divisions. They still play every year. Of course, Tennessee has not won since 06. Before Nick Saban got there. 06, right?
That was since 06 that Tennessee beat Bama. That's not fun. No.
And Bama has won, I believe it's 87 straight games against non-ranked opponents. So good luck, Tennessee. Tennessee, of course, let's not forget, coming off a resounding win over Mississippi State at home, and you can laugh at that, but at least they got the win. And if you're Tennessee, any win, let alone an SEC win, is a big win. But obviously, we're giving Alabama or Tennessee no chance in this game, right?
I mean, how could it happen?
Yes, I'm officially giving them no chance. Bama, 34.5 point favorites.
All right, Mike. Our picks last week were what? And also, it should be noted that they were a little, I think they seemed to be chosen on the spot during recording of the podcast. So it was not the most astutious picks of ours.
Now, of course, I think we should take a break to tell the listeners how dedicated we are. We tried to record this podcast all over suburban Seattle near our hotel at a shopping mall near the airport. And we failed. We failed miserably, but we came back and did it in our hotel room in Tukwila, Washington. So, yes, there wasn't a lot of prep that went into the podcast last week in terms of picking the locks of the week, but I still hit mine. I took Texas +11. They got the cover. You lost yours. You took Iowa going against Penn State. Big mistake. You took Iowa +3.5. They did not cover. So we're both 4-3.
Which is fine, right, I think?
Absolutely. But anything above 500 is gravy.
All right. Bobby hit the bumper.
Place bets on college football.
Gambling is illegal at Bushwood, sir.
I'm shocked to find that gambling is going on in here.
You're winning, sir.
Oh, thank you very much.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
The Mike Unger 50-50 possible lock, probable loser of the week.
Please hang up and try again.
Tim, for this week's Lock of the Week, we are going to Columbia, South Carolina, home of the resurgent ? South Carolina Gamecocks? I don't think so. I think they're going to have nothing in the tank after coming off a Georgia win. I saw the interview with Dan Mullen after the loss to LSU, in which his team played very well, and he was all about the SEC East and how important these SEC East games are. I think he's a great coach. I think he'll have his Gators team ready. I just think that Florida's much, much better team than South Carolina. The visitor in this series has covered 4 of the last 5, so I'm taking Florida -5.5.
Level of confidence, Mike?
I'm going to say high on that one. I feel pretty good about this pick. I'm going to say 8 out of 10.
So I'm going with on a weird pick this week, Mike. So everything I've heard is that the worst team in the SEC is definitely Arkansas, right? And even taking into account Vandy, that Arkansas is worse.
Interesting. There's some bad teams at the bottom of the SEC.
Auburn minus 19 at Arkansas. I feel comfortable with Auburn.
You're taking Auburn minus 19 at Arkansas. Arkansas, yeah. Of course, another noted possible locale for one of our trips. We all have a deep fascination with Fayetteville and seeing some Arkansas football, our Arkansas Razorback football. That is an interesting pick. It could be a result of your extreme exhaustion that you're still fighting through, and we can hear in your voice now here at the end of this podcast.
Right, I'm struggling very badly now, Mike.
All right, Mike. Have a drink of whatever's in front of you and say the words.
What are your plans for the weekend?
I will be in Cleveland, Tim, watching the one game that you didn't even have the decency to talk about.
I'm sorry, Mike. The Indiana-Maryland game. Go ahead.
Indiana at Maryland. Maryland coming off a season-crushing blowout loss to a depleted Purdue team. IU coming off a huge blowout win over Rutgers. Indiana, a road favorite in College Park over Maryland. Wow, the college football landscape can change quickly. Right, Maryland was a toast of college football a few weeks ago, and now they are getting 6 at home to Indiana. But I'll be watching that at 3:30 somewhere in Cleveland, and then watching hopefully the Penn State game at night against Michigan. That should be a great scene there.
So should I send my sister Colleen some Maryland gear for the game?
I don't know what I'm going to have. I'm going to be wearing my mixed gear. I'll be wearing my Indiana gear, my Indiana shirt, my Maryland hat. But yeah, as each year I pick whatever team needs the win more, and it's Indiana this season. The way the schedule is unfolding, IU has a much better chance of making it to the Magic Six and making it to a bowl game than Maryland does. So I'll be pulling for the Hoosiers.
We'd be so brave as to wear the candy striper pants, Mike?
No, the candy striper pants, they're only worn in my own home neighborhood of Canton or in the state of Indiana proper.
All right. Folks, thanks again, Mike. Are you tired?
Get some sleep, please, Tim. I wish I could sleep for like 3 days in a row.
All right. One thing to say.
Puchas.
Puchas.
Thank you for listening to the TCFA podcast. For more college football news and